For the latest news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring the Boston Bash Brigade, visit our website at www.b3crew.com.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BostonBash Brigade. Follow us on Twitter under our respective pen names.
And don't forget to check out the rest of the Land of Esh programming, including the Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, and the Issues program.
Hey everybody, this is Radio Scott Vine, and you're listening to the Boston Bastard Brigade. Ha, ha, ha. Here's my first track from my debut 7-inch single, IKEA Crime Jazz EP, and this track is called Wet Dream. Cheers!
Joined today with an old friend of mine from the old days of WM Salem, DJ Radio Scott Void. Welcome to a special edition of One on One.
Hey man, how's it going?
It's going very good. How about you?
Oh, great man. Thanks for having me on, Evan.
Not a problem. Anytime. So, first of all, what first drew you into the electronica music scene?
Well, I was a DJ in Edinburgh when I was, probably 24. 23, 24, played in a couple of clubs there. But before, I moved to America, and I really wanted to kind of bring what I was doing back in Edinburgh in a club night. It was called Curios. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to do what I was doing back in Edinburgh. So I decided to kind of start it up here when I moved to Ceylon and started writing music, started DJing and collecting records, and eventually tried to get a demo together for WMWM.
Awesome.
Something like that.
So why America of all places did you want to... What drove you to America instead of, like, say, France or Germany or...
Sure. Well, first of all, I learned German in high school, but I didn't really know any other languages. So really it was, I suppose you could say Canada, America, Australia. If anything, I wanted to go and travel. But the thing is that when I was in college in Edinburgh, during my summer breaks, I would actually come over to the States and work on summer camps for kids with special needs, actually. So,
wow.
Yeah. So for two summers before I finished my degree in Edinburgh, I came over and worked as an art teacher. So when the job arose to come and to go for a permanent job in the States, it was a no-brainer, as they say, because I had the experience of working in the New England area, Connecticut and New York, but I'd never been to Boston. So I applied to work for an agency on the North Shore, and I moved here in 1999, and I still work for the same company.
Wow.
So that's my story in short.
Do you remember the first track you ever created, and what was your experience like when you had to like piece it all together?
Well, I would say one of the first rawest songs I ever made, and it's never really been released, but it was using a little sampler and a little sampler keyboard, a Casio SK-1, and a little cheap mic from Radio Shack. And I did it as a live take. Funnily enough, I had all this stuff velcroed to an old school chair. You know, one of those old school chairs that has like the right hand side has like a almost like a little half desk attached to it.
Yeah. I used to have those back in middle school.
I found one of those, and I made this little weird chair where I had a sampler and a keyboard and a microphone on it. And one day, I made this song called Leaving Again. I do have it somewhere. And I don't know. I thought it was great. I thought it was cool how I could just, you know, make stuff up that was in my head and, you know, just goof around. And that's kind of how it all got started.
I'm pretty sure a lot of people would be interested in hearing that track someday, sometime.
Maybe.
You should release it on like as a special thing on your website sometime.
Yeah, like an oddity or something.
So I've got to ask, what became of this special desk chair concoction you created?
Well, I still have the sampler, and it still has the Velcro on the bottom, but the chair, yeah. I don't know, just kind of disappeared in time. I don't know where it is, man. Maybe I should recreate it or something.
You could probably do that very simply. Just I would say every next summer, just walk by the schools, see if anyone's throwing out old desks, and just steal one when no one's looking, and just go and do it yourself again.
Yeah, you know, could carve a hole in the bottom, and could be a commode as well, you know. I don't know. You know, I think of strange ideas. I'm a strange kind of guy.
We're all strange people here. So, coming to America from Scotland,
yeah.
How did the music scene differ between the two countries, especially when it came to the electronic music scene?
Well, one thing I really noticed was that... you know, I would say 90% of the venues that I was going to in Edinburgh, everywhere had a set of turntables, and there was DJs walking around playing the majority of the time, playing all different styles of dance music. When I moved to Ceylon, you know, obviously it wasn't the city, but it was the opposite. It was, you know, 90%, 95% of the bars had a band, and there wasn't really any DJs. So my idea was, well, hey, you know, I want to fill in the void, and that's where the name came from. I want to play in between the bands and kind of bring some of that, I don't know, some of the kind of DJ vibe, I suppose, that I was used to. Mm-hmm. And kind of show people that, you know, instead of putting on a jukebox or something, you know, you could actually have somebody spinning tunes that was maybe similar to the music that was being played live. So I'm a big fan of funk and jazz. So that's kind of how I got started around here, playing in between jazz and funk bands. So, I know it's not electronica, but I was still DJing. I was still, you know, cutting stuff up. And at the time, I was kind of into scratching. And so it was kind of like hip-hop DJing and funk DJing. But it definitely wasn't like electronica or EDM or how things are kind of happening nowadays. It's really quite popular.
Yeah.
Now, but you know, back in the 90s, you know, it was pretty popular in the UK. It still kind of is, whereas I think more people were into maybe you know, rock and roll, you know, or going to see bands here,
right?
Whereas, you know, so it's a different, there's definitely a big difference.
Right, actually. And it's weird because, like, with the exception of like a couple groups like Daft Punk and Dirty Vegas and a couple other artists, the electronica scene hadn't really hit here in America until like a couple years ago. Whereas in like Europe, it's been going on crazy since like the early 90s with artists like Scooter.
And, yeah, well, Scooter. Wow, there you go.
Yeah.
The old Scottish Gabba techno guy. But you know what? As funny as that, it's quite ironic actually that the electronic music, you know, techno or electronica, back when it was kind of called around then, all kind of came from America. So, you know, Detroit, Chicago. New York, so that was in the underground here and in the States, but it was being kind of played to the in the clubs and then eventually to the masses in the UK and Spain, Europe, yeah, Ibiza, you know, that kind of style. Yeah.
It's as if in Europe it was a lot easier for the music to be embraced there compared to here in America, where it was still very underground.
Yeah. It was embraced. I still feel like, you know, it's possible that, you know, Europe can embrace the disco era. And I think, you know, that era in the States, that definitely kind of died a death, the disco era. Mm-hmm. And what early electronic dance music or early house music was really, you know, guys who were into disco who were making stuff with drum machines, and eventually it became, you know, repetitive, and it was put on the records, and then DJs were mixing it, and that was, you know, that was how it kind of started. But it never really took off commercially here. It definitely had to become big in London, Manchester, Ibiza, Italy, Spain, Holland, yeah, most of Europe, and then eventually it kind of crossed back over here. So, you know, it's kind of like what happened to Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, basically. And I like to think, too, that this whole electronica thing was a spun off originally from New Wave, they basically took the electronic side of the New Wave music and just removed all the live instruments. Yeah. And then from New Wave, kind of spun off from where disco was, where they took out the funk element and made it more straightforward and could do different styles of music, whether it was an alternative or even even folk here and there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Eventually it became, you know, I mean, wow. I mean, I think that comes with technology, I think, you know, because most of it was, you know, either a turntable or a sampler or a drum machine. But then eventually when, you know, computers started doing it, people started making music in their homes, you really could blend all sorts. You know, Fortet was really the guy that blended folk guitar with the drum beats and stuff too, so... Yeah, it's all great. I mean, I'm a big fan of it. I mean, I still listen to a lot of funk and jazz and 60s and 70s vibes, but I'm not really, I don't really listen to any, I listen to Nirvana and stuff, the grungy stuff, but I never really, after that, I kind of just, all I really listen to is kind of electronic music, which is, that's just all I listen to nowadays, so it's, yeah. Nothing really gets me. There's nothing really that kind of pulls me in right now.
Right. And yeah. one of the subgenres, if we want to call it, something that you specialize in is chiptune, which has gotten a lot of popularity these days because it's got this sort of nostalgic feel to a lot of us people in our 20s who used to play with Nintendos and Game Boys.
Yeah.
And do you feel like that sort of, do you feel like those old school games helped bring about this sort of chiptune popularity that we're seeing today?
Yeah, it has to be, whether it's conscious or subconscious. It has to. You know, I think, you know, every generation ends up kind of being nostalgic about stuff that's 20 years or maybe what their parents might have grew up with or something like that. They might have heard it in the womb or something. You know, I mean, I love the disco era. People who are a little younger than me are big into the 80s era, and you know, I think with the Game Boy music, I think that's a 90s thing, or something like that. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of nostalgia involved in it, but obviously nowadays, some of the things or some of the sounds that you hear coming out of a Game Boy or a Nintendo with technology and some of the hacked games that they can make now, it kind of sounds like the old video game music, but 30 years in the future where you've had all these different electronica genres happen over the last 20 years that have, you know, now the chiptune kids are basically, you know, taking influence from like house and electro house and all that kind of style. So I almost see like chiptune kind of straddling side by side with some of this EDM stuff that's happening right now. I definitely can see that kind of coming into the mix.
Yeah.
I don't personally specialize as far as make chiptune. I do dabble with it. I do have the hardware to play around with that kind of stuff. But I've always been a chiptune DJ. And that's important for me to kind of tell people because, you know, I never want anybody thinking that the music that I'm playing out there, I'm actually have written it. Some of it I do write and I incorporate some chip elements in there. But when I'm playing with the Boston 8-bit guys, I'm the DJ. I'm in between all the acts. I keep the vibe going. I'm filling in the void, as you know. That's the name. That's my idea.
Right.
Keep the flow going so that there's no breaks in between and it's a wall of sound. So what I do is I try and play other people's music that maybe people haven't been exposed to, and that kind of stuff. So
yes,
that's, you know, the role of a good DJ, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
So you played in many unique venues, from restaurants and small clubs to even conventions like PAX East. Out of all the places you played so far, which has stood out the most for you and why?
The Middle East upstairs. That's what I say.
One of my favorite clubs.
I've played there 3 times. I love the sound. I love the venue. It's intimate, but it's big enough to get a good crowd going. The staff have always been really nice. The sound guys have always been really nice. And we've managed to sell that place out a few times.
Mm.
You know, bringing up some cool acts from New York, Minus Baby, Radlib or Oxygen Star from Connecticut, Disaster Piece, we talked about Fez before.
Yes.
You know, James Primate and Chris Mahoney, Act of Knowledge. Mm-hmm. those guys and myself, we met, we did the first gig at Felt, and that's how the whole Boston 8-bit thing kind of got up and running. But, James and Chris, James particularly in the last couple of years, have been really pushing the chiptune scene and making sure that there's people at the venues. So Middle East, hands down. Yep. Great set, great bass.
Absolutely. and I actually prefer it over the Middle East downstairs. I mean, I know Middle East downstairs is bigger, but every time when you go down to the Middle East downstairs, like 10 minutes in, you're starting to sweat to death and you start not really having that grit of a time. Whereas when you're upstairs, it feels like it's a lot cooler, both metaphorically and literally.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something about it. I think that it's just got a great, like I said, it's intimate, but it's not too small. The stage is high enough, you can jump off it.
Yeah.
That's one of my dreams, to jump off that stage dive. I actually missed the last Boston 8-bit show about a month ago. Carol was supposed to play Radlib and myself, and we both were sick, so we never made it. And I had a few really kind of hard techno tracks that I wanted to play in between the acts, and I had a dream of just kind of jumping into the crowd, because the crowds that come and see these shows, you wouldn't believe it. I mean, they call it nerdcore, but I mean, you've got some really cool nerds there who are really into the vibes and the music, and anything goes, and they're up for everything. Everyone's dancing.
Oh yeah,
like glow sticks and stuff. It's like a little mini rave, and it's really cool.
I'm actually looking at a poster in my room right now of Bright Primate, and I remember when James and Lydia came up on stage and did their thing. Just a crowd there was just going crazy for it.
Yeah, they got a great act, and they've really developed over the last couple of years as well.
Yeah, their recent album, what was it, Night Animals? It's a great CD.
Well produced too.
Yeah, very James well produced.
James has got the knowledge. He's I think he's classically trained as a composer, and I think he's worked in a studio before, so he definitely knows how to put together an album. So props to that.
Yeah, I've seen some of the pictures he's posted of like all the stuff that he's composed, and it's all in like classical form, and it's like me picturing my mind. It's like, okay, how do you take something like that and turn it into all the beeps and boops of the chiptune?
Yeah, well, I don't know if have you ever experimented with any software at all,
music. Besides, like, GarageBand, not really.
GarageBand has it. There's a piano roll, it's called.
Yeah.
And it's a keyboard from start, top to bottom, and it goes from, the lowest octave on the left-hand side of the keyboard to the highest octave. And basically, they're all numbered. So each of the notes are numbered or lettered and then numbered for each octave. So C6, C7, whatever. Those numbers are what are used in the programs that they use for Game Boy. So you're pretty much putting in a number and a letter, and that will play that specific note on the keyboard. And you've only got four channels most of the time.
Yeah.
So a drum, a bass line, a synth, and a lead or something like that. That's usually, and that's the cool thing about the Game Boy music, chiptune, I think, is that you're really limited to what you can use, and so I think that's the challenge, for a lot of these guys, is to see how much they can squeeze out of that Game Boy,
Yeah, and it's crazy when you see them actually performing live on stage with the Game Boy. It looks as if they're actually playing a video game live on stage, just dancing around.
I think for me, hearing it, for such a small chip, to hear something like that played through, like a compressor, and then put through these big speakers for big bands. I mean, you're talking, it's a great sound system in the Middle East or wherever we usually play, and to hear that unique 8-bit sound coming through like heavy speakers,
right,
it's pretty amazing.
I know. I remember years ago when I got to interview Nobuo Uematsu, the composer for most of all the Final Fantasy video games, and he mentioned how much easier it is now to compose video game scores compared to back then, because while you have all these like different instruments you can use now in the big budget Final Fantasy games, back in the old days you were just limited to like the three sounds that could only be used in a Nintendo Entertainment System title.
No, you're right, man. You're right. And so, you know, a lot of these guys are, I mean, genius, you know, genius level. You know, I just play their songs and give them props. I'm like the whistleblower, you know.
Right.
I like it there.
And it's crazy because a person from my perspective would think it would be the other way around, because you would think, okay, he's got to compose music for this one, and then he's got to compose music for this instrument and that instrument and for the chorus and all this. But having to deal with three different sounds and have to change them all up in such a way that it sounds different each time, that's a bigger challenge.
Yeah, that is definitely a challenge. Not something I could do. Nah. But props to them all, you know. Yeah. I love all the guys. Really cool kids too, you know. Never a problem.
Yes.
Never a problem. Everyone's always really happy to play. And most of the time, you know, we don't really play for any money or anything, you know. I mean, most of the time it's just enough money to cover the venue.
Right.
So it's all about the love, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've got the passion for it, you just keep on going and doing it.
There you go, man. Definitely.
Yes. So you and I, as I mentioned beforehand, we met back at WMWM Salem, over at Salem State College, back when it was a college, not a university, where everything got so tidy up and all that fun stuff. So how did your experience on the radio change your perspective of the music scene, or did it change it at all?
Because what I did in Salem was actually go out and try and find all the local bands so I could play them on the station. My idea was, you know, even though I was doing some electronic music and chiptune and stuff like that, there was shows that I just did local. It was called The Local Hour. And, you know, basically, you know, and this is just as the Gulu was starting. So before we had that local scene at the Gulu, where you've got a lot of, you know, a lot of acts are kind of attracted to that area. We had, you know, rock and roll bands, punk bands playing at Dodge Street, you know, and maybe even, I don't know if you can remember going back to where Deacon and Giles was, Red Room.
Yes.
To the Front Street, Bleachers, and all those kind of places. I mean, I got here in 99, and when I got here, Dodge Street and Salem had a really thriving punk music scene, rock and roll, garage bands. And that was really my thing. I just used to try and meet the bands and find out if they had demos and just put together, you know, 1 hour shows of, hey, listen, this is what's going on in our town. Because, I mean, Salem is my home away from home, and it's my home now. But I always wanted to kind of spotlight Salem. I think that it's underappreciated.
Yeah,
and there's a shitload of bands too. Oh, sorry for saying.
You can swear on the show.
There's a lot of bands in the North Shore.
There are. Well, that's what was happening with my radio show back at WW Salem. As it was starting to end, I was discovering all these different local artists that would come, and they would come in, they would do the acoustic show, and they would just blow me away. I was shocked by how many talented people there were here in the local area alone.
Yeah, I'm like, I kind of run around with a jazz crowd. I like, you know, I'm involved with the Salem Jazz and Soul Festival, and, you know, I've been kind of hanging out with Fats Hammond for about 12 years, and, you know, those guys kind of connected me to a lot of the jazz and funk musicians around town as well. And you'd be surprised, there's a lot of people that live up here that, you know, studied at Berkeley, but they'd live and play up here, and they'd make a living. You know, they'd go to school, but they'd play every night, make $50 a night. I mean, I know artists, I know guys that play every night for $50. And have been for like the last 10 or 12 years.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of working musicians in the North Shore.
Mm-hmm.
Props to them. They're still doing it, you know.
Absolutely.
And underappreciated. It's a shame.
I totally agree. And it's kind of sad, too, because, you know, Gulu Gulu was thriving right now. They're doing very, very well. But now a lot of these other clubs, like you mentioned the Red Room and even Dodge Street, like, disappeared.
Yeah.
That was a sad day for me when I heard Dodge Street was closing.
7 nights a week, free music. Nobody did that.
Yeah.
I don't even think you'll get that again, you know. I mean, you've got the Spotlight Tavern. They're kind of doing stuff over in Beverly. But, yeah, it's a shame, really, because, I mean, I met so many people there. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I remember back in the days of, I don't know if you ever remember a guy named Robbie Roadsteamer, but he used to do a bunch of shows over at Dodge Street.
Yeah, I do, actually. I remember him. Was he bald?
Kind of. He had the...
Kind of shaven head or something?
Yes, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't he do some work with in the City 2, WNBR?
He did BCN, actually.
BCN, yeah. BCN. Yeah, oh, that back room at Dodge Street was great. I mean, I love it.
Yeah. I used to go to classes.
Big up with Frank, you know. And yeah. Frank, I've listened to this. Big up Frank, man. You know.
Yeah.
It was a sad day. I remember the day, you know, I remember going in and, I mean, I had a couple of pictures on the wall in Dodge Street, and I remember the day Frank was kind of, it was a sad day. And he gave me back the picture. He's like, oh, I kept this for you. You know, he had a little tear in his eye, you know. It was a sad day.
It was. Yeah. And it's going to be, I think it's going to be a couple more years before we can find something to fill that sort of void, as it were.
See, the funny thing is now, because, you know, the city of Salem's changed since back then. And, you know, they've been really trying to get, you know, young families to come and live in Salem. And they've been promoting it as being like a thriving nightlife and things like that. But what's been happening lately is that... a lot of people have been complaining about the thriving nightlife, and a lot of the venues have shut down, and or they've told the music has to be stopped by 11, or there's neighbours upstairs. And so it's very hard, it is very hard to, it will be very hard to bring a venue like Dodge Street back into downtown Salem. I don't know if the town wants that, to tell you the truth.
And it's sad because it's one of the biggest draws to in Salem is its thriving music scene and nightlife. And I feel
nowadays,
like,
I think what they want is people to come for the history, for Halloween, for shopping, you know, that kind of thing, eating out, restaurants. I don't think they want people to come to Salem for the music. I don't think they do. I would hope that they do, but I think it's going to have to be more than a... more organized fashion.
Like a sort of promotional thing. Like,
yeah, it has to benefit the town.
Yeah.
You know, Frank was a rogue. He was a rogue runner. He was a one-off, you know, and I think that after he was the last of the bleachers and the last of the Red Rooms and the last of the Roosevelts and all that kind of stuff. And after that, I don't know. I'm optimistic, but it would be great to see a venue in Salem. We need it.
Absolutely.
Because
I kind of remember as a kid, not just with the clubs and everything, but when I was a lot younger, like Winter Island would be hosting all these jazz and blues festivals, and they'd bring like 20, maybe even 30 performers for one day to perform on stage, and it would bring like thousands of people, and it was such a great event each time.
Yeah. Well, I've heard in the pipeline there might be something going on down there. I hope so. Fingers crossed.
I hope so.
Yeah, I've heard a few things, but we're not certain yet. But you never know what might happen in the next few years. So that's all I'm saying.
Fingers crossed. Absolutely.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, definitely.
So from what you learned at WWM, you jumped onto the online radio station known as Datafruits. So what was it about this online station that made you want to join forces with them?
Well, the guy Tony that runs it, I think he's in Washington, Seattle, or Portland, Oregon. He's out that way. We got connected through like a Squee or Chiptune Facebook group, and he approached me and said, "Are you interested in doing a radio show?" He'd heard a couple of my mixes on Mixcloud, but he'd never heard that. He didn't know I'd done a college radio show before. And one of the first things I said to him was, "Can I swear?" I also said, "Can I play three songs by the same artist in a row?" And basically all the restrictions that was put on us at WM at the end. Mm. You know, it was really hard to do a show and type in the name, the artist. the label of every song. It kind of like interrupted my flow. Mm-hmm. So he basically said, look, man, he's like, you can do whatever you want, you know, within reason. So I basically decided to redo the Curio show that I was doing at WMWM and make it more about the style of music that I was producing and the style of music that I was DJing. So more squee, 8-bit, and bass. That's the theme. Squee, 8-bit, and bass.
Yes.
So that's why. And Tony said, hey, you want to do it? And he's like, yeah, I'll podcast it. You know, I'll help host it. And it was really easy. And I was like, I can do it from my bedroom. You know, I just needed a little program. It was very simple. And so I'm like, hey, finally, technology has given me the ability to do a live streaming show from my bedroom. And anybody in the world can listen to it if they want or if they don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got about 160 people who are in the – it was a private group. I made it public last week.
Yeah, I saw that.
Really, yeah, it was really just it's just for friends. And then eventually it kind of, you know, it kind of spread a little bit and, you know, really happy with it.
Yeah.
So it starts back up on Sunday, by the way.
Yes. So we should make a note that people can actually download the Datafruits app for their iPhones and other Droid-related phones.
Yeah, totally. And if you press play on it right now, all the different shows that have been broadcast over the last year are on rotation, so you can catch something. And then when we do a live show, it just kind of kicks right in. So you can press play when we're going live, and you'll get it live. So
yeah, and that's very cool.
Yeah, totally. A kid from Japan that made it. I'm not sure who it is, but the guy, Tony, is very I think he's friends with Starpaws. I don't know if you know who Starpaws is, but he's a chiptune act from Japan, I think. Not sure, actually. Don't quote me on that. But he's got a lot of friends in Japan. I know you have friends in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So he got some guy to make the app for him. And it's a great little app. Very simple.
Yes.
You just press play, and that's it.
Yeah, and it's funny you say Japan, because there was a Japanese artist that really drove me into getting into chiptune, Mr. Omodaka.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and he played Blip last year, right?
Yeah, that's what Bright Primate was telling me that he did. Yeah. But I remember when I saw him, I think it was either 08 or 09 when he did the Japan Night show over at TT the Bears in Cambridge, and it was one of the craziest shows I've ever seen, but what he was doing was just amazing.
Yeah, that would have been cool to see. Yeah, he has a cool stage presence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are so many areas in the electronic realm, where, ranging from the trance and dubstep to the nerdcore-based chiptune, which we've been discussing about. Is it really difficult for electronic artists to stand out from everyone else, or is it finding that unique sound in this dance music world of sorts a lot easier than one can be expected?
Yeah, I suppose that's up to the listener, really. You know, electronic music, I feel, has always been a little bit more underground, so it's never really been in the forefront like pop music. So, you know, people who are looking for music underground, it's up to the person who has, you know, a lot, you know, most people who are into electronic music have more of an acquired taste, because the subtleties of the music is not like going to see different bands. You can have stuff, you can have 10 people doing trance music, but there's subtleties within it. So I suppose what I'm trying to get at is that it's yeah, you have to have your own unique sound, but at the same time, you know, like anything else, you have to be original, and also just do what you love. You know, that's the only advice I would say for an electronic artist. You know, just make up whatever you like, keep making it, and eventually, like any artist, you'll fine tune it until you have it the way you want it. I mean, I've been doing this for 15 years. I still don't really have my sound, except that usually it's muddy and it sounds lo-fi, you know, that it sounds like it was done in a bedroom. But You know, I mean, I skip around from bass sounds to chip sounds to, you know, even funk sounds. So I'm not trying to prove anything. I would advise the same thing for anybody who's into electronic music, the same thing. Just do your own thing. Keep on doing it. And if you love it, you'll keep doing it, you know, and eventually people will take notice, I think. I think that's what's worked for me. People have noticed that I'm not really doing it for the money or the fame or anything like that. I just do it anyway.
Yes.
And people see that I'm in it for the long run. So they're like, hey, I can support this guy.
Yeah.
He DJs, he does music, he's cool, he's all right, you know. But, you know, each to their own, you know. There's a lot of electronic music out there that I don't really like. But doesn't mean that it's not good. It's just that I don't like it, and so it's my own personal taste, you know. So.
Right.
That's really it.
It varies from person to person, honestly.
You know, like a DJ. A DJ has his own flavor. He brings his own record back, you know, with his own sounds. Even though they're not his sounds, they're the sounds that he likes. Mm-hmm. So eventually, over time, people can recognize that, oh, when Scotty's going to play, he's kind of going to be doing this kind of stuff. And when Evan's going to spin, he's probably going to be playing J-pop and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of like how it goes, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you are just on the verge of releasing the 7-inch of IKEA Crime Jazz.
I released it on Sunday.
Oh, so it is out.
Yes, yeah, it.
So, first of all, where did the name IKEA Crime Jazz originate from?
Well, the music that I kind of like have been inspired by in order to make this 45, this 7-inch, is the squee music I've been talking about. And it's basically Scandinavian synthesizer funk.
Yeah.
So that's where IKEA comes from. So it's a head nod to the Scandinavians. Crime jazz is just my own word for kind of, like 70s soundtrack funk, like maybe like the theme tune to Dirty Harry, something like that, where it would be, I'd call it crime jazz. It would be like instrumental, atmospheric film score music that had that kind of funky wah-wah kind of sound, the blaxploitation movies from the 70s,
yeah,
aft, that kind of stuff. Yeah, so that's kind of like IKEA crime jazz. Yeah, that's how it, there you go. That's how that came, where that came from. Yeah.
So we started out the show. We played the first track from there, "Wet Dreams." So how did this song come into fruition for you?
Well, I wanted to make a song that was loud enough to be played in a club and be really beefy and almost like a hip hop track, but at the same time make it sound like it was made from a really cheap synthesizer. because the whole kind of idea behind squee music is to squeeze the most unique sounds you can from whatever kind of synthesizer you can find, whether it's a $10 Casio keyboard or, you know, an old Roland from the 70s, whatever it might be, and then take the sounds from the presets and kind of mash them up and create a certain, it's kind of like chiptune, where you have different genres of chiptune. You have hip-hop and house and dubstep and all that stuff, but it has this certain sound, the nostalgic 8-bit sound. Well, squee's kind of the same, where it's kind of got that certain old vintage synthesizer sound. So the idea behind Wet Dream was to create a crime jazz sound, a 70s kind of, almost like a, you know, an adult movie kind of kind of soundtrack almost. That's why they got the sleazy names. So it's kind of like, it's a head nod to synthesizer music. It's a head nod to funk. It's a head nod to hip hop. It's a head nod to kind of low fidelity music. Yeah, something like that. That's kind of like how it kind of happened. Sorry, I'm off on a tangent there.
So. Awesome. So what's next for Radio Scott Void? What do you got playing next?
Oh, wow. Well, I have a lot of music that I've made over the years that I want to bring out live. For the longest time, I've been pretty much a DJ. And I do have a lot of studio work that I've done, I've released over the years, and it has been a little, you know, dirty and grubby. And what I'm hoping to do is kind of clean it up and kind of give it a new, give them all a new lease of life, and then possibly perform it solo or with some other musicians, maybe a keyboard player, and kind of jam out and have it like a, almost like a synthy funk band.
Kind of like what you were doing here and there with the System Soul, correct?
Yeah, well, that's yeah, System Soul was more just me and Jesse back-to-back DJing. We never really collaborated on any songs together. That was the idea at first, but then eventually it just became we were just DJing. And now Jesse does his own original stuff and I just kind of DJ in between. I'm no quite as fast as putting together music and being able to perform it live. It takes me a little bit more time to do that. So I'm hoping to spend the next year putting together a lot of my older material and giving it a new lease of life, and then eventually taking it out to the clubs in Boston, hopefully.
Awesome.
That's the idea.
So, yeah. So speaking of live shows, when's your next performance?
Well, I play around Salem. I play at 43 Church with Jesse. Jesse Cimataro Quill. His band is the Soul Review Project, and I DJ with him once a month there, spinning, you know, there's different stuff that I like to spin, kind of house music and funk and hip hop and instrumental stuff, because it's a bar scene. It's not really like a chip tune scene. I also play the Howlin' Wolf with Jesse. That's where we can get a little bit more creative with their DJ mixes. That's usually once a month too, Howlin' Wolf Salem. But I've got a big gig coming up March 2nd. I'm actually opening up for Mouse on Mars, which are a big electronic band from Berlin in Germany.
Nice.
That's it, Great Scott. Yeah, so that's and I'm going to be spinning my own vinyl that I just pressed, the new 7-inch, along with some of the Scandinavian synth funk that I have on vinyl too. So it'll be a vinyl set of about an hour and a half before Mouse on Mars hit the stage. So really excited about that. Cool.
Excellent. Now, before we introduce the second song from the 7-inch, what I'd like to ask all the musicians that I have guest on one-on-one or on the B3 podcast show is it's sort of a variation of a sort of game you might have with, you know, your friends drinking and all the fun stuff. It's called Three Album Island, and it's basically the hard question of, if you were stuck on a deserted island, which three albums would you like to have on your person to keep you sane until your imminent rescue, and why?
Oh, wow. Well, I'm going to say right off the bat, Never Mind the Bollocks, Here's the Sex Pistols.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of my favorite albums growing up. I was big into punk when I was in my teenage years. So I'm going to say that. The Sex Pistols, Never Mind the Box.
Okay.
Definitely.
Great album.
So that's number one. Number two, then, I'm going to go jazzy, 70s jazz funk and the stuff that I love. It's a UK band called The Soft Machine. And they have 7 and 8 albums. I find it very hard to pick one of them. I'm going to just, off the bat, just say Soft Machine 4, which is their 4th album.
Yeah.
And it's mostly free jazz with kind of weird organs, and the songs are like 20-30 minutes long.
Nice.
So the Soft Machine, they did actually support Jimi Hendrix on their American tour in the 60s.
Really?
But they developed from a folky rock band to more of a kind of avant-garde jazz band. Wow, and third album, I'm going to just say like an electronic album, because punk, jazz, and then electronica, that's really a combination of everything that I ever really do. Wow, you know what? I could easily say Daft Punk's Homework, because that was a really influential album for me. So we'll stick with that.
Okay.
Is that...
That's a good set of choices there. So the second song off the 7-inch, Wider Insider. Tell us a little bit about this track before we play it.
Well, the other song, Wet Dream, has a really loud synthesizer in it. It's really kind of bright, kind of obnoxious. But it doesn't have much low end. I wanted to work with low end, meaning bass, and I wanted to make a track that was post-dubstep, that had the flavors of everything that's been going on lately, all the different styles of funk music, electronica, hip-hop, because I like to mash genres together. This track, Wider Insider, has this kind of swelling bass line in it that kind of really only get the benefit if you're listening to the record on a really good system, not on your computer speakers, because you probably won't be able to hear the bass. It's quite low frequency. So it was just a catchy little line. Again, sticking to that kind of porno theme, Wider Insider, it's a dirty name. So I was kind of sticking with that 70s porn funk idea, and but it to be kind of current, you know. I wanted to kind of it to be kind of current. So the bass line's got a kind of dubstepy-ish low end to it that I'm really happy with. So yeah, you know, it was a learning process. It took me over a year to really come from start to finish, developing the songs, mastering, mixing. It was mastered in Berlin. It was pressed in Detroit. Artwork was done by my wife. The design and the topography was done by my buddy in England. So it's really like a collaboration from all over. It was a dream of mine to be able to put together my own record. So yeah, I'm really happy with it, man. Now I'm just reaping the rewards of just getting interviewed and talking about it, which is really cool. And I'm taking a big break from actually staring in front of a computer for the last year.
Yeah, by doing an interview that you got to have to stare in front of a computer for.
Yeah, exactly right. So, did you see that I got it in Japan? I was quite happy about that.
Yes, I saw that. Congrats.
10 copies.
Yes.
So it's funny. It's funny how these things work. And you know what? The internet has really made the world a smaller place, huh?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Definitely.
So listeners, enjoy Wider Insider. Thank you. My thanks again for Radio Scott Voigt joining us here on 101. Tell people where they can purchase the IKEA Crunch Air 7-inch.
Bandcamp. Bandcamp was probably be the easiest way for you to go and look for it. Just type in Radio Scott Voigt, and it's with a K. S-K-O-T-V-O-I-D, one word. If you're in Europe listening to this, there's a few stores in Finland and Sweden and Germany that has it. And like we were just saying earlier, got a few copies in Japan. But if you go to the Bandcamp site, if you don't want to purchase it from me, you can get it from one of those stores, and you can see all that stuff on Bandcamp. So, or just go to my website, radioscottvoigt.com. So yeah. Just Google me. I've been spending too much time on the internet over the last 10 years, so I'm all over the place.
You can follow. I don't think you can follow me on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. You know, all that stuff. So if you're interested, go ahead.
Awesome. So we're going to
close. No spam, you're right. No spam.
Yes, no spam at all. So we are going to close the show, this special episode of One on One, with a remix that you did for Small Colin. So yeah. How did this come to be?
This is one of my earliest collaborations. This guy is a Scottish guy that moved to Sweden. And we met each other on MySpace, back when MySpace was big. And it turns out that we only lived about 20 miles from each other. I was in America, he was in Sweden, and we decided to remix each other's songs. Eventually, we decided to team up and make a, create a little act called Small Radio. So Small Colin is basically the other half of Small Radio. So, and so he just released an album, and he gave me the separate tracks, and he asked me to mess with it, and that's what I did, and it got released. Actually, he didn't release it on his album, he was supposed to, and it got picked up by a French record label. And they decided to put on a compilation, and it's coming out in about a week. But there's a video right now. You can check. There's a video that Chris Mahoney did.
Yes.
Active Knowledge. Yeah.
Excellent. So everyone, please enjoy this last song of Mutations, remixed by Radio Scott Voigt. Thank you again for joining us here, and we hope to have you again on the show.
Oh, brilliant, man! Hey, all the best, and good luck, Evan. Thanks, man.
You're welcome.